So I've never given a Dharma talk before. I've been told that I have nothing to worry about. So we'll see. You will be my judge and jury. I would like to start with a quote from a Buddhist teacher, Reginald Ray. He is an American Buddhist academic and scholar. He was a student of Trungpa Rinpoche for 40 years. True Dharma is not about credentials. It is not about how many practices you've done or how peaceful you can make your mind. It's not about being in a community where you feel safe or enjoying a cachet of being a Buddhist, quote unquote. It's not even about accumulating things, teachings, empowerments, or spiritual accomplishments. It's about how naked you are willing to be with your own life, and how much you are willing to let go of your masks and your armor and live as completely exposed and undefended and as open a human being as you can be. So I was rather surprised by this. I mean, this is a guy who's been imbued in Buddhist practice for 40 years. And he came into a crisis. He'd been diagnosed with cancer after many years of practice. So he started to get his life in order and reassess what was important. And curiously enough, the diagnosis was completely wrong. But it gave him such a jolt that it shifted him over to being a full-time teacher. One of the things I'd like to discuss is the notion of all of us coming here today. What brought us here? What brings us to sit Zen practice? Each of us has some story, an origin story, an I was born story, an I grew up story, and I've suffered story. Joe is one of our teachers here, and one of the things he mentioned to me several months ago was that most people do not show up at Zen centers because their life is just going terrifically well, and that is a fact, I think. I came here rather by chance. I said to someone that I care dearly about recently that I jumped off a mountain and I landed at Chukoji 2 years ago. And in jumping off the mountain, I didn't realize that I had packed so light. And I had been in India last time for 2 years. My wife and son live out there. My son is 11. And some things have changed for me in terms of living in a rather cloistered community out there. Are you from India?
Yes.
I was in Kerala.
Oh. I'm a studying guild.
Oh, okay. Well, I was near Changanur. And I couldn't shake the darkness that it was creeping into something and inside myself. I went out there for light, which I found a brilliant light that passed into the horizon in 2001. So I found myself a little bit like Dante in his masterwork, La Commedia, that midway upon the journey of our life, I found myself within a forest dark. For the straightforward journey, the straightforward pathway had been lost. Ah me, how hard a thing it is to say. What was this forest savage, rough and stern, which in the very thought renews the fear? So bitter is it. Death is little more. Speak will I of other things I saw there. I cannot well repeat how there I entered, in which I had abandoned the true way. So Mr. Dante Alighieri and I share a common feeling. Midway in the journey of life, I found myself in a dark wood, a jungle, hot, humid, with a tropical sun that bore down relentlessly. So one fine night, I decided that I'd had enough, and I boarded a plane out of India, a midnight flight to Singapore, alone. And there was darkness all around. I found myself in Singapore, which for me is a bit of a jewel in Asia. And I spent a few days in Chinatown and eventually boarded a flight to San Francisco. That was 4 years ago. And I showed up with two suitcases, broke, in debt, and I ended up living with my father-in-law up in the hills out here. And he is a rather accomplished alcoholic, and he didn't really like me very much. So we sat up there in the hills, and he drinking his wine and watching baseball games, and I'm more like a couple of bears looking at each other, and I wasn't sure which of us, who was going to kill the other quicker or faster. And he gave me shelter, but at a very great price. So, long story short, it's not so short. I was tumbling off the mountain. No friends, no job, no money, no wife, and no son. And I didn't know what the hell had hit me, but I was in pretty serious trouble, I guess. And I kept tumbling, And I got some work here and there. But it was the worst recession since 1929. I'm in my 50s. I have an eclectic resume and a profound sense of being disconnected. So I I did finally get a job at a startup, and it was run by people who were morally, flexible. Morally flexible. Liars. And I've never been so uncomfortable in a business setting. An investor would come in, talk to the CEO, ask him about the financials, and he would say, "We're profitable." Lie. Customers would come in, ask about the company, "Are you profitable?" "Oh, yes." Lies. Now, until I was asked to write a press release by the CEO, he said, "By the way, at the end of this press release, mention that we're profitable." So truth has suddenly become a lie. Lies were truths, and I had no idea where I stood. But I knew I had left India. And with that, just enough of myself to fashion something. When you leave a high control group where there is one singular person, a guru, and where everything has been deemed a certain way, where you're told when to show up and when to leave and what to eat and what time to eat and when to go to bed and when to get up and what's the narrative and what's the interpretive reality around you, when you devote yourself to that kind of belief, and you suddenly walk out, you don't want to be there. So, along the way, I was in Los Gatos one night at Whole Foods. And I was standing in line, checking out. And next to me was a man, rather large guy, broad shoulders, like a bear, with all these dreadlocks and a beard, big open expression, big bright blue eyes. And he was holding a couple of things. And I looked up at him, and I don't usually speak to strangers. But I had to do this. I said, "Far out. How long have you been doing this with the dreadlocks? What is that?" I don't know why I said that to him. I mean, it's a little risky. And he was very nice to me. We didn't talk about the dreadlocks very long. I mean, that's not really what happened. But what happened was, he mentioned that he was living at a Zen center in the Santa Cruz Mountains. And I said, "Really? Well, tell me about that." It's a place called Jokoji. And I had an inner push to go back to sitting in some meditation again. And I'd been looking for a place to sit in some kind of meditation. So, I mean, he really caught my interest. And he said he was a resident and he was transitioning out of here. And so I started to come up here on Sunday program. And started sitting. And along the way, something took root. Rather surprisingly. I wrote an application statement of intent to reside here. I was still working at the startup, and I sensed there was a very shakiness. The floor there at the startup was very, very flimsy. I just didn't trust it. And my instincts are usually pretty accurate. I moved up here. I lived as a temporary resident. I was sitting every morning, going to work and coming back at night. And one of our residents here is an elderly gentleman, Greg Campbell. He's been in Buddhist practice most of his adult life. And he told me about a year ago that the Tibetans have a sort of saying that you've taken up Buddhism, and now be ready for your life to fall apart. And I was very surprised by that statement, because that's precisely what happened. I did come here, I was accepted here, and shortly thereafter things began to fall apart. I was dismissed from my startup in a very perfunctory, arrogant manner. Our director came back from a long hiatus and informed me that I may not be fit to live here, so I had the possibility of being asked to leave. I had no job and just a few $100 in the bank. Family's not with me. Friends are not interested. So there I sat. I had met my teacher here, Val, who has a Sangha and a Zendo in Sunnyvale. And one way or the other, I held on to something. Or something held on to me. I'm not entirely sure. But as it is Easter, and we're in the midst of this Western tradition of rebirth, I have to add to this that I don't like to put a lot of flourishes around what happened to me, but some ground began to form around me. And I just continue to show up. And I mean in the Zendo. And my teacher exhorts us to sit daily, even if only 10 minutes, daily. Don't doubt it, don't question, put that aside and sit. And she's right. I don't know what happens when I'm in a Zendo. I often feel that I'm in a state of just constant mind-tripping, daydreaming, memory, what happened yesterday, what happened 50 years ago, what might happen tomorrow. Sesshin will take care of that. But I didn't expect to come here and experience something that is undeniably profound. I am the last person that would come here with that expectation. I'm sorry, I didn't ask you your names and where you're from. I'm so sorry. I'm a little nervous. Would you please? What your name? I know, you're Todd. You're beautiful. We know you. You're famous. No, no. Go, please.
I'm Heidi, and I'm in Sunnyvale.
Okay.
I'm Daniel. I live in Sunnyvale too. We live together.
Okay. And your name is?
Daniel.
Okay, nice to meet you.
And Ravi. Just live in Palo Alto.
Okay, beautiful. And are you practicing Zen?
Well, on and off. Yeah, I've been here before a few times, and yeah, I'm familiar, but I don't practice. I don't see it every day.
No, okay. And yourself?
So I sit every day, but I've not formally received teachings or been with a teacher or being part of the Sangha. I've just sort of done it on my own, so this is my first experience of being part of a group.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And Lance?
Santa Clara. I'm practicing Zen now.
I'm Bill, and I arrived here alienated from the Christian religion, and I recognized that I needed a spiritual life. I am new here, and I hope to get rid of some of the confusion that occurs when I come up here, because I simply don't understand enough.
My name is Sayako, and I live in Los Gatos, and I came here 13 years ago on the edge of despair after my mother's death. And ever since I come here when I want to, when I can get up.
I'm Bree, and I'm a resident here. I don't know how much story you want. But speaking of rebirth, my little sister is in labor right now, so.
John, I live over there.
I think I've seen you once or twice. And Todd, please. I'm sorry.
I thought you did it all for me.
You let it off.
Yeah. I can definitely feel an affinity for your story. We're similar in age. Maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know. Of reaching this middle place. So I found meditation through various means, and I think it's a good thing. So definitely healing and helpful, and a bit like a compass, I suppose. So thanks for sharing that.
Thank you. I'm sorry I didn't ask. There's a little bit of a format here. I've broken it. Usually we start with introductions.
Others before you have broken it also, because there's no established pattern, I don't think.
So I'm noticing, because it's my job to watch it, time, and there's that weird thing that happens in that seat with time. So you're just getting to the point of the profound change when you jumped out of that, and so we're going to run out of time here.
Okay. Soon. Well, let me just.
But
I was hoping. Thank you. I was really hoping that each of you could tell me how you ended up here. I am now. deeply immersed in practice here. I've been given an opportunity to help with guest relations and helping with people who want to come here and deepen their practice. So I respond to inquiries if people want to have a retreat, large groups, that kind of thing, and help get the room set up. And it's very nice for me in a way because I just sort of provide a setting for people to deepen their practice here. And I don't have to get too personally involved, which is, I'm not a teacher, so. What I have to say about part of what I've been surprised is the sort of the three beautiful things about Buddhist practices, and I mentioned the Dharma, which is the teaching. And it's just beautiful. The poetic expression alone is enough to knock me out. But the deeper wisdom that is presented in the teachings. The notion of Sangha is perhaps even for myself an even greater gift. Gift isn't even the right, doesn't approximate what I mean. But what I mean is this. I have this great benefit here. I get to meet people who come up on Sunday. I get to meet great Dharma teachers that come up and give talks every Sunday. And that's how I met my teacher. She came in from Sunnyvale on Sunday, gave a talk, we connected. I get to meet Joe and Bree, and Todd, Lance, Bill, I don't know you that well, but this what I'm about to say is something that came to me within the last week. We just a week ago concluded a week-long intensive at Chikoji. He has three or four of these every year. And Lance, Bree, Joe, we were all together in that week of sitting many hours together in silence, sharing silent meals. And I was profoundly touched by this deep connection that arises when ordinary people just come together with a kind of intention to hold that. And it's a bond that I really did not... I've been through Sesshin before, but this time around, when we finished that and got together Sunday afternoon, and we were talking Sunday evening, the connection was palpable. And Lance, I feel that with you now. I mean, it's just a that's the deepening of Sangha, I think. We don't have to say much about it, but it's there. we it's like we plugged the depth. So that's Sangha. Yes, Todd. And that's where I'll stop because I know I'm running out of time. But thank you. Yes, Todd.
Just something that came to mind when you said, well, I'm not a teacher. Because you don't wear black or robe or something. But your hair needs to be short. and somebody said that to me, and that wasn't the case for them, to me. It came to me that you may not realize the importance you have on other people. And I think you said the group and the Sangha, that's partly, I think, what my sense is why it is so powerful. I mean, there is a conventional part of the ceremonies, mm-hmm. the way we are, that there is a hierarchy, but in some ways the deeper aspect of teacher student, if you will, or that kind of paradigm is more than that. Mm. Which is maybe what you were, seems like kind of you were touching on.
Mm-hmm. But there's one last thing I will conclude is what my teacher has emphasized is please continue to sit daily. Thank you.
I do have time for questions.
You did?
I did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm interested.
Questions or comments?
I think you mentioned at the beginning of the, when you started to talk about the quote by the famous Buddhist scholar said that it's about being vulnerable and being open, and that's really the part of the practice, and I think your talk sort of builds on that and exemplifies that. So thank you for being vulnerable and having the courage.
Thank you.
John, that was spellbinding. It really was, your talk. I was just, and I could also see the faces and the attention was just glued to you. And I was kind of teasing you out there about it. They say, Yoshu, when you speak, you would see gold sparks that come from his lip. He spoke very quietly. And I didn't see gold sparks, but I heard definitely those were words of gold. What you were saying was, you know, so heartfelt and real, which the quote at the beginning of the fellow being, you know, he said, be authentic, be real. We had the science in Buddhism, and one point they used the word spiritual, and I said, I don't really know what that means, you know, it's a word that gets bandied about. But I do like the word authentic, you know, or how he put naked. You know. And I also remember someone objected to the direction this topic was going because it felt it was bringing up a lot of fear. It was about a threat to the planet. Kind of fear. I was disappointed in that because Buddhism, you're not supposed to be avoiding your fear. see things as they are. You know, you look if it is fearful. And the whole situation you describe, you know, was... I mean, we've all gone through that by this time in our life in some form or another. It's different for everyone, but you know, you may like middle age crisis, sort of. You spoke about it, and I think when you're young, you go through something unpleasant, and you think, "Well, it'll get better," you know, or when I'm there, you know, and I will be something else, you know. You can keep, you know, changing the channel, you know, and I will change the channel and I'll be this other, and then everything will be okay. Right? But you get to a certain point in your life and you can realize, it's, did you see that film, As Good As It Gets?
I own it.
This is my favorite line maybe in all of filmography, where he says, what if this is as good as it gets? Yeah. And, you know, you realize that, no, this is how it's going to be. I have to make it, you know, here, yeah, and accept the situation that I'm in and find true worth just in, you know, being this beat up old guy. Right? But, you know, a beat up old guy has a significant place in the Buddhist realm, which is what's wonderful about Buddhism, and as you said, Sangha. And it's the one last thing, I'm sorry, the guy said your life will break down, you know.
The Tibetans say this, yeah.
Because it is, you're taking on, you're kind of running against societal values. Here at Jokoji, there's a lot of bohemian, not as much as there used to be. It used to be just almost total alternative people. And I always think this friend of mine, this is from Seattle, an old Zen practitioner, this real cynic. I love him because he's hard, and you know, there's no flowery stuff with him. And he brings this up. He said, Zen people were sick. They say there's something wrong, you know. They're not normal. We're like sick people. That's why we do this. And I would defend that. I say, no, you're just saying you don't, you know. But then I say, you're right. You know, we are. But we recognize that we're sick. That's the difference. Is many people are we're all sick. You know, we all have a sickness, you know, existential sickness, or you want to get dramatic about it. But many, maybe most, you know, cover that up with distractions and do, you know, avoid. And they think, well, I'm okay because I have some status, or maybe money, or I have lots of girlfriends, or who knows, right? Here, and that's why the value of sitting, you know, who are you when you're just sitting and you're not being anyone? You know, what's the worth? So I'm glad you're here.
I'm glad you're here.
I always enjoyed your presence here.
And the feeling is mutual.
I'm glad you're not living with your father-in-law. Bless him wherever he is. And it was still a good... I mean, even there, he sounded like a mean kind of problems, but he did take you in, you know. We all have some...
And a beggars can't be choosers.
That's right, yes. I know.
Thank you, Lance. That's really great. By the way, I think that acronym beat up old guys BOG.
Is it? Oh yeah.
So it could be a gal too.
Yeah.
Beat up old gal.
Beat up old gal. Yeah.
That's great, Lance.
I just like to say that. I have many things going on in my life. That leave me somewhat fearful. I have illnesses. If they start to run away with me, they will run away with me. And then I have this feeling that somehow or other, if it strikes too fast, I won't be in the right place. I will not have completed what I want to complete. And I come here, I meditate regularly at home, not every day, but I do set a time, not a specific time every day, but I do set, I pick a time where it's quiet, and I can do it in the comfort of, I call it my little garret. It's upstairs, and it's very quiet. I still get the horns from Los Gatos. They seem to be there all the time. But between what I do at home and what I do here, I always leave here much less fearful. And I find that to be a blessing, because I haven't found anything that comes close to the peace that I get. Oftentimes it's just from these surroundings. It's the beauty of this place. It's the isolation of this place. And it provides me with the kind of strength that I need to face. I'm 71 years old. I know that my life is not going to go on forever. But I'm not fearful, you know. I do hope I go quickly if I go, you know. And my wife and I have both, we both have advanced directives so that we don't want to linger. Mm-hmm. We each have the power to help each other die. And she's going to be faithful to that. And if it's her, I'm going to be faithful to that. So that we both have plans to go out in a way that we control. And that's it. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Last question. I remember my wife seeking my mind talk the first talk. It kind of went, if you were there, it was dark, it was cold, I was walking in the bog, it was dark, it was cold. But then I ran out of time. And then I never got to what I really wanted to say. So I'm just curious, because this is the end of your talk now. I left the part where the sun came out, you know, and there was a little more I wanted to say. So, Did we miss anything, or I'm just? Did you? Was there anything that you would like to say before we leave?
I think you're able to detect that I'm in a pretty good place. There is within the last 2 weeks, several things have happened, most unexpectedly. In the area of my work, and in the area of my heart, and I'm not able to attribute causes of why it had happened, well, during Sashin, actually. you must believe, I hate to use that word, but a conviction would probably be more appropriate, as it's more secular. But sit every day, give yourself that. You will find a way through this dark wood. I can guarantee that from my own experience.